Episode 48.
Episode 48.
And we've got Mr. Peter Booth, MJ Tiff's body double. He's back in the hot seat. Welcome back, Pete.
Thank you.
And we've got two new guests. We've got the lovely
Dan Cox.
And we've got
Roger Bisbee.
Ah, two great guests tonight. So who would you like to start with, Pete? Who should we...
Hang on a minute, I've got an objection here. You said the lovely Dan Cox. You didn't say the lovely Roger
Bisbee. I said the two lovely guests. Did I say two lovely guests?
God, it's all right. Don't worry.
I think I did.
Go on, Roger. You lead the way.
Sorry, what was the question again?
So... how did you get into the trade?
Okay.
And then how did it evolve? The main question is, probably for me, is what made you want to start making videos on YouTube? And how did it, you know, where did it come from?
Yeah. Well, for me, it's quite an unusual one, I suppose, because I started as a plumber, left school with no qualifications, went into an apprenticeship and... Yeah. I worked for the grumpiest guy I've ever met, apart from myself, that is. An old guy who didn't want an apprenticeship, didn't want to know me, didn't talk to me all day, didn't give me anything to do, wouldn't give me a lift to work in the morning to get there by bus and all the rest of it. And yeah. It was miserable. It was really miserable. So after about 3 months of sticking that, I told him to stick it, basically. And yeah. I was off, and then I was off on my travels. Around the time of hippies, a long time ago, you wouldn't know about that, but it's a long time ago. And I basically just took to the road and left and just went off living on the beaches and travelling.
So how did you fund that? Were you working part-time?
Honestly, I didn't fund it. I just lived.
Just did it.
Just, you know, yeah. It's amazing what you can find in the way of free food in the back of supermarket bins and all sorts of stuff, you know. But anyway... Yeah. I was travelling around, you know, as many, many people were then. It was the summer of love and all that stuff. You know. So anyway, I didn't want to work. I didn't want to do anything, so I was fine. So somewhere down the way, I ended back up and I thought, I've got to do something other than bits of labouring and so on. And then I thought about the plumbing again. I thought, okay, maybe give that another go. So I went back there, went to college, got my city and girls, did the whole thing. So became a plumber. And I wasn't a plumber for that long before I saw an opportunity for writing for people doing DIY magazines and things like that. So I went and saw somebody in London who was doing a DIY publication. I realised they knew nothing about it. They got all these guys in there from university who'd never put a shelf up or anything else, but they were trying to produce these DIY magazines. So I got involved in that because I got practical experience and... from there into books, from there into radio, LBC radio I did for 15 years. Fix-it phone-in on a Saturday morning, answering people's problems. Then the television picked me up. And then after that, I say after that because it kind of, I won't even tell you how it ended, but, you know, I fell out with them. Funnily enough, I was here in Redditch for a week doing, what was it called? House of Horrors, that's it. Right. Which was like
probably a few around here, to be honest.
Rogue Traders type thing. Yeah. And we were there for a week. We had a house rigged out, secret filmed, cameras everywhere. We were calling up known rogues, people that Trading Standards had complaints about, asking them to come and do little plumbing jobs, which I'd set, you know, like maybe a thermocouple on a boiler, loosened, you know, silly little things, you know. It would take somebody 10 minutes to fix. So after a week of being up there, we hadn't got one single rogue. For some reason or another, they just did an honest job. You know, not all rogues do 100% rogue jobs, you know. Yeah. So whatever happened, it got to the end of the week and the producer was tearing her hair out, phoning up the programme, phoning up the director on the site. So we spent all this money. We've got all these people sitting in hotels, cameramen, you know, everybody. And we've got nothing to show for it, you know. And Friday afternoon, excuse me with the voices, Friday afternoon, the last hapless plumber came in. Poor guy, lovely fella. And he looked at the boiler and he said, okay, fix that little problem. He said, but I shouldn't leave this boiler running because it hasn't got a large enough air brick, conventional flue. And it was in a boiler house.
Right.
And the actress that we had playing a housewife went, oh, please don't leave me without any cold, please. So he was going, well, I should really close it down. He said, but if you promise me not to go into the boiler room, He said, I'll leave it running, but on Monday morning, phone the company, get the air brick changed to a larger size air brick so it complies. There's no signs of any carbon monoxide or any discoloration. So, excuse me, sorry, I'm going to get a drink of water there. So he left the boiler running. Then the director said, we've got him. You know, poor bloke.
Yeah.
They're going to take him to the cleaners on national television. And I said, no.
Yeah.
I'm not having anything to do with that. I said, as far as I'm concerned, the guy was, you know, and that's where we fell out. That's where I stopped doing those traders and everything
else.
Did
they air it?
No, they couldn't because I wouldn't endorse the, you know, thing. So they needed me to say, you know, as the expert, if you like, he did wrong and I wouldn't say it. And anyway, so that was me at the end of that. So all those programs, which I've maintain. So no, it's not true. So after that, the BBC asked me to do a show, and I said to them, the only way I will do the show is if it starts off saying that the majority of tradesmen are good, honest, conscientious people, and it's only a few that cause the problems. And they didn't want to do it. They really didn't want to put that in. But I said, excuse me, sorry, my voice is gone. So I said to him, if you don't do that, I'm not doing the show. So they did put it in. They didn't like to, but they did put it in. So So anyway, so YouTube came off the back of that. When YouTube started, I was already well into doing corporate videos and all sorts of other stuff. So the guys I was working with on those, we started Skill Builder.
Yeah.
Why do you think TV then has this big issue with tradespeople? Sounds from obviously your experience that they have.
For a start, I've got to say, excuse me, when I have yet another bit of your free water. I can recommend it, by the way. It's very nice.
He only drinks Evian down there.
What's the difference in?
That's marketing, isn't it?
I stick to the British, you see, not like...
I think for a start, it's an easy story to tell. I think it's snobbery.
Yeah.
As much as I like to not think it's snobbery, I think it is, because I think solicitors and all kinds of other people and all kinds of, you know, city bankers who can buy a house, a very large house, on their annual bonus and so on. Nobody ever takes them. Well, people criticise them, but they don't take them to the task in the same way that we do.
Mm.
And they don't do secret filming on solicitors and all these other people, do they? Well, they absolutely should.
Rogue solicitors.
Yeah, and rogue everybody. You know, there's plenty of other rogues
around. Off the back of Rogue Traders or any programme like that, within the trade, we always say they should make a programme called Rogue Customers because a lot of the time, your tradesman's doing a good job and the customer's not paying or all kinds of things are going wrong. But I think the thing with like a rogue traders program, it's when people want to see things going wrong and bad things happening, but it's not fair if they're, you know,
unfairly targeted. Yeah.
Cause sometimes obviously, if they're coming out and something's been manipulated and it's an easy fix for me, I've been to them before where my toilet's not working. Someone's turned the isolation valve off. Like you think in your head immediately, someone's got to have done that on purpose.
So you're looking for cameras.
I'm not going to say you need a new toilet now. You know,
you're waiting for Roger to come out. Pizza Booth, I've got you.
But if you're so dishonest that you would see some blood and use it as an opportunity to rip someone off or con someone, it's not on. But there can't be that many people out there that would.
And the guys that I've known over the years who have gone out of their way to do jobs for people for nothing and all kinds of things, you know, and just looked at somebody and thought, well, they can't afford it, so just let it go, it's Friday afternoon, whatever, and never get reported. They never get any kind of publicity, any kind of recognition at all. So it's very, very sad, but I'm afraid that's the world. We always like a bad story.
If you're a self-employed tradesman, I find it difficult when it comes to the money side, because when you're at college, they teach you how to plumb, but they don't teach you the business side of it. I always feel a little bit awkward asking for money, even though I've done a job and you know, I'm owed the money. But if it's something small, especially for, you know, I don't say it, but like a little old lady, if it's a small job, you don't really want to give them a bill. So if they offer you something, then especially around Christmas.
Two jammy dodgers.
So many nice, kind acts. It's similar if you're having an operation tomorrow, you Google it, you'll only read the bad stuff associated with the operation. You won't hear the success stories because people don't, when something nice has happened, they don't talk about it. It's only when something bad's happened, they talk about it. And that's probably why those rogue traders programs were popular.
I think there's a problem if you're charging money as a tradesman, jobbing, you know, plumber or whatever you're doing, If you've got no interface, if it's just you and you've got to make up mind how much to charge, but if you're working for a company or an agency or whatever, you know, a lot of plumbers work through somebody else, yeah. It's all set.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at somebody like Pimlico Plumbers, for example, and you look at it, they've got a list of charges. They're completely upfront on their website yeah. as to what they charge. And it kind of helps the situation because when you go in there, they already know what they're in for. But you look at the prices and you think, my goodness, you know,
astronomical.
How have they got, I mean, how have they got the nerve to do that?
Has it got worse on the prices since Charlie?
Funny story, but I was at FEX last week and someone told me that their auntie had had Pimlico out and it was just a boiler fix valve wanted swapping, £400.
Mm. Yeah, they are expensive.
How do you justify that?
Those boiler fix valves are expensive, aren't they?
What's that, 2 hours work, tops?
No.
2 hours?
Depending on the system, even if you had to drain the whole house down and swap the valve, you know, half an hour.
I did one yesterday. I think it's just gone out on social media. I jumped it.
Yeah.
You know, which for people who don't know means you don't turn off anything because you can't, you know. And so I went, right. So I said to Dylan, the cameraman, I said, get this. Because it's just like, it was, you know, I got wet.
So the YouTube, did that take off? Because I've got a YouTube channel and it's very slow. I don't post enough, but did it take off pretty, was it a long, hard slog?
Do you know what? I think when we started it, we didn't really know why we were doing it. We just kind of thought, and we didn't even monetize it for quite a while. Yeah. And it's only after a while we thought, okay, it's beginning to work. We'll monetize it, but it was never going to be a living. And I'd say, you know, there's a lot of kids out there who say, right, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be a YouTuber. Yeah. So, say, if you do, prepare yourself for 8 years of
slog
without any meaningful reward on it. Yeah. Now, that's not going to be true of everyone. Some people hit the ground running. Just first video, viral, fantastic. But for me and, you know, a lot of other people, it's just keeping going.
And did you keep going because do you enjoy doing it? Do you look forward to it? Are you always thinking, what's my next video going to be? Or is it work?
Do you know what? I think it's like the only reason I stayed as a self-employed plumber is because I couldn't sack myself. Yeah? Because after you've had the worst job, and I could talk about the worst job I've ever had, that's another thing, but, you know, you come home from the worst day's work you've ever done in your life and you just think, I've got to do something else.
Yeah.
And you wake up that morning and you're still a plumber and you haven't got another job and you haven't got any. So the plan B, if you like, so if YouTube fails, what do I do then? I hadn't got anything else going on. So just keep going. So it's not like I was going to quit. I wasn't going to quit unless there was something else better to go to.
Yeah.
And I'd already tried television, decided that it's not good. I mean, I love YouTube because you control your own content.
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely key. And I think, okay, you get all those horrible comments, loads and loads of trolls, you get loads and loads of ridicule, but somewhere down the line you get people to say, thank you so much.
So yeah, you get the YouTube then. Like, obviously my thing is, how do you keep bringing that content, that new stuff, and thinking of ideas? Because it's so difficult. You know, you post content, we all post content. Every day you've got to come up with something new to keep people engaged.
For us, it's a bit easier because the title is a bit broader. We're not just doing carpentry or plumbing or whatever. We can do lots of other things. And I have strayed into politics. And every so often I have a rant about something called Roger's Rant. Yeah. And actually, people say, you should give up politics, mate. You should just concentrate on plumbing or whatever. I say, well, look at the numbers on the politics ones. Look at the numbers on that Roger's Rant, whatever, about heat pumps or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like a million views on it, and I think, well, maybe politics channel is the one to do. But
vote Roger.
and Charlie Mullins is keen on the old politics as well.
Yeah. Charlie Mullins, I'd have a great time arguing with Charlie Mullins. I really. Funny enough, anyway, it doesn't matter. It's all back in the past. But
so here's a question for you: if you were in politics, say you're a politician, mm-hmm. what would you do to increase the uptake for skilled trades? Because that's one thing, obviously, they're saying now that we're going to, 10 years from now, there's going to be a trade apocalypse and we're not going to have enough skilled tradesmen and women.
Okay, it's the 1st of December. Mm. And Daniel has been out on site How cold is it then?
Oh, it's too cold. I'm glad I had to stay off.
So it's very hard to sign people up for that kind of job, isn't it? Now, you know, unless you're going to pay them well and they're going to have respect and prospects and everything else, to actually get people to go out on site, freezing cold weather, pouring the rain, whatever it is. And the other side of it is when it's really, really hot, you know, and you've got to work out. Daniel was working out on a decking job. I was filming it. And I was finding it hard enough just filming it, and Daniel had to do the work. So I don't think there's an easy answer to that, but I think that we have to make it more attractive in terms of its social standing, which is very difficult to do, isn't it? Because
do you think there's more snobbery about it now than there was 30 years ago, 20 years ago? Is there more snobbery
around? No, I don't think so. I think people are realising, you know, there was a guy near me, I spoke about him the other week, who was an airline pilot. You know, he was a British Airways captain, and he had to retire for health reasons. And he thought, "What can I do? I've got my kids are in private school. My wife is
spending money.
Yeah, exactly. She's used to spending money. Blah blah blah. What can I do that's going to make me as much money as being an airline pilot?" And he thought, "Why not become a plumber?" Mm. So he set up his own plumbing business, called it Southern Pilot. Very successful. Very good. He's well turned out. He's got guys working for him. He studied the subject himself, he wasn't hands-on all the time, but he just brought all those disciplines to bear that he had in his other work, and he just made everything really well documented, meticulous and professional, and his business just took off, and well, to use a pun, took off, you know, but it crash landed, but you know, so I think people realise that you can make a very, very good living as a tradesman.
Yeah. So going back, what do you, over your whole career, have you got a worst job?
What, the worst job I ever did yesterday? Yeah,
yesterday.
No, I mean, okay. I'm really dwelling on the jobs that made me want to quit completely. Just say I cannot carry on doing this. It was one where I flooded a block of flats, and all I did was went there to fit a washing machine for somebody, turn the stopcock off, and as I turned the stopcock off, the thing just blew out my hand.
Yeah.
And it was on the live side, you know, so there was the stopcock. It was a soldered one, not a compression fitting. It was soldered in, and it was soldered in by an absolute smidgen, as we've all done with a solder joint. It slips out when you're soldering, you don't. So it sat there all those years until I came along, went like that. So I've got this water gushing out, you know, maybe six floors up, I don't know, whatever. And where do I turn it off? So I went down into the front garden, as it were, and there were all these row of stopcocks. I got my turnkey out, turned every single stopcock off, hoping one of them was the one. And it did, and it stopped the whole flat. Then you got people shouting, "My water's off, what are you doing?" So I fixed the problem. And then I had to put a card through everybody's door all the way down because the water had run down through the flats. Then I'm the plumber, phone me.
Yeah.
I'm the plumber who's flooded your flat. Yeah. So, and then, of course, the next thing I get is that the I didn't think it was my fault because I thought it was an existing problem and so on, but the management agency for the flats was saying, or whoever, leaseholder, whoever is, was saying there wasn't a problem till you arrived.
Yeah.
So it's completely down to you. So I had the nous to take some photographs of it. I got an engineer's report on it, and I did fight them, and I did win. So I didn't have to. My public liability insurance wasn't affected by it. But it was. But that was just a low spot because I got home and the phone was ringing. All these people phoning, "You flooded my flat. You ruined my. I want a new telly out of you." And all of us. They all talk like that, by the way. That's me impersonating. How every complaining customer talks to me.
I'll just put you through to customer service. You what?
So that was one, and the other one, which was worse in a way, was I was working for the Surrey County Council, and I just put in an oil boiler, put in a new tank outside, everything is in the farmhouse, and I needed a fire valve, you know, the fire stop valve that you put on, so on the oil line. So I left the oil line through the wall, ready to go. The oil tank was empty, you know, I just fitted it, wasn't a problem, and went down to the plumber's merchants to get a fire valve. And in the meantime, I didn't notice, but the farmer had ordered a load of oil.
Oh, no.
They filled the oil tank up. The guy turned the isolation valve on to check the gauge on the side that was filling up. So, and when I got back, when I got down to the plumber's merchants, I met a mate of mine, and he said, you can give me a hand with a boiler, because you'll need to lift up and, you know. So I went via him, had a cup of tea with him, piece of cake. By the time I got back to the farmhouse, about an hour and a half had gone, walked in the back door, and as I stepped into the back door, it squelched.
Oh, God.
The whole of the ground floor of his house was covered in heating oil. You can never get rid of the smell.
I can smell it now.
You basically, you have to demolish the house. You know that, don't you? There is no way of getting the smell of heating oil out. Fruitful. So I'm like, and of course, the Surrey kind of comes from my client. So what the hell happened there? And I'm saying, well, actually,
It was the tanker driver
because, you know, he turned it on. But how did he know? And I realised what I should have done. It kind of just crossed my mind as I left. Should I pinch the end of that copper pipe closed or fold it or whatever, yeah, just to...
But why would you?
I never ever leave a live, even a dead pipe, like a water main, you know, I'll cap it off. There's no water going through it, I'll cap it off.
The worst job I can think of in recent history was just the customer. I didn't like the customer. So that wasn't necessarily the job, it was the customer. I didn't like going to the house, didn't like the guy, didn't like the woman. So that's the job I think I've spoken about before. I had a panic attack on the way one day. Just didn't like it. So, but yeah, normally.
So what did you do, run away from it or what?
No, I had to finish it. I was driving there and I started crying. So just parked up.
Yeah.
I had half an hour, had a word with myself. And then just a lot of the time, you just got to get your head down and get through it.
Ladies and gents, just a quick one to say a huge thank you to our new headline sponsor, CT1, the best sealants on the market, voted for by the British public. Not only that, it's made in Britain as well. So go and support a product and a brand that is made in the UK. But I just want to say to you, they've got a brand new product out, which is the BT1. It's a combination sealant and adhesive like the popular CT1, but it's perfect for keeping a hygienic environment. And it's designed to completely stop the growth of bacteria, microbes, and fungus. And not only that, this stuff is strong. Now, it's going to be available at Travis Perkins, Wicks, Juicens, and pretty much everywhere else. So there's no excuse not to go and give it a go. So we're really happy to be partnering with CT1.
But Dan, your hinge jig, let's big your hinge jig up, because this is a work of art, people. If you've never seen this, you've got to have a look at this. Forget the other ones. Forget the other ones, because this is...
So talk us through, obviously, what you've got in front of you here. Just talk us how this will help in scenarios.
It's just, I've always had it in my head for literally about 12 years. I've always wanted to make a hinge jig that was more adjustable than the trend one with an open aperture.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's got to be adjustable. There's a few on the market that are not. So why spend 200 quid on a non-adjustable one? And it just took all this time to come out. And then working with Ralph, the pair of us working off each other, which was good just to get the final details.
Ralph from Bench Dolls.
So this is a collaboration between...
Yeah, so his first collab he's done, so obviously got my name on there, and he's...
Yeah.
It's just good to work with English firm. I can talk to him like we're all talking now, where other firms, years ago with a square, I met a firm, it's around a bigger table, me and my partner there, he's the opposite side, and it was just like cold and whole
Dragon's Den type feel.
Worse, I should think. I've not been on the Den. It was just no rapport there, no nothing. I'm just thinking, I don't think we can go into
business. I think some companies as well, they don't respect your opinion.
I think in a way, because I've been down to Ralph's factory with Daniel and watched it, and the guy's totally absorbed by developing the product. It's not about the money at the end of it. He loves the money. It's nice to earn money, isn't it? But it's not, you don't start out, whereas when you're talking around these big tables with these guys,
they're talking,
it's all about the money. The minute you walk in, what's the margin? What can we do?
The thing I've always found is if you make a product because you love it and your heart and soul goes in, you make money.
Right.
You don't have to worry about that because it just happens. If you make it and it's like, it's premium, it's really well made, it saves you time.
The reason this is so good is one thing, it clamps straight to the door so you don't have to put any pins in, whereas you have to hammer pins in some of the other ones. It is, as he says, very easily adjustable, you know, so that's... hinges are different sizes. This is the thing. Even 3-inch hinges, if you get them, they'd be different. So having it adjustable to that degree of precision is great. And it's because it's got this side access, what happens with the other one is that you have to plunge the router into it, and then if you're like me and you're not concentrating, you go to take the router out, it's still spinning.
Yeah,
take a piece off.
Exactly that. Straight away, suddenly you spent 200 quid on a hinge jig and it's got a lump out of it. And after that, you fall out of love with it because you can't replace that part.
Yeah.
So you're done. So having that side access where you can go in spinning, you can get the thing spinning, just go in, out, plunging them. Fantastic. So if you use it, once you use it, it makes you realise the limitation to the other ones. And people may not be aware of that. When they're driving a car, they may not understand the limitations of that car until they drive a better one, and then they go.
Well, the thing with that, if you've never used one, you'll never realise you probably need one.
Mm. Is this the first product you designed?
No, the first was my roofing square.
And this? Sorry.
Yeah.
Talk us through that then, Dan.
So, yeah, it's just, again, I was pitching a roof and I was thinking there's got to be an easier way of doing it.
I
like an easier life.
So you're doing a roof and you think there's an easier way to do it?
Yeah, so the older ways was doing it was, I bought this with me, you'd make like a template, a pattern rafter.
Yeah.
You cut one out.
I feel like I'm on QVC. So
yeah. We'll go back to adverts in a minute as well. So you'd get this and then you just use this and keep drawing around it.
Yeah.
But what I was to find a ball lake was keep putting a big long 4 metre rafter on top of it. Now you can put bits of wood on top, but to get it in nicely, I kept thinking it's got to be an easier way. So I'll come up with that.
Right. So go on.
You got it?
Then it sits on there. And it just marks out your plumb cut and seat cut, as you can see. So whatever the pitch of roof is, you put round here.
Right.
Set it 30 degrees, you lock it off on 30, and that's set, ready to go. So I just use a tape measure. So in the early days, going back to Facebook, little on me, I'm like trying to plug it, and then you've got all the aunties and all the trolls, and all the old boys of like, oh, we don't
so that's
like
all
that.
Fully adjustable.
Yeah.
But the best early part was Roger done a preview of six squares, and the minute Roger on YouTube said, this is a good square.
I didn't say that. I said it's a weapon of mass construction.
And a weapon of mass construction. But once Roger gave it like the seal of approval to him, I say, this is a good tool.
Yeah.
And other people think, oh, trust Roger.
Yeah.
I don't know who
Because it's,
I am.
It's really hard to get a tradesperson to change
exactly.
what they do.
And one of the best things I get every now and then is I'm going to say a more mature person like myself.
Yeah.
I had a bloke a little while back text me and he went, look, I've been in the trade for a while. And he went, I love it. And when you've got someone who's worked one way for 20 or 30 years and think, do you know what, I'll give it a go.
Yeah.
I love it. That is.
And the best is if they say, I wish I'd got it sooner.
Well, I've done a few trade shows and all the older gentlemen to come for a free bacon roll and like, oh, I wish I had that in my day. I was like, well, unfortunately, I didn't.
Yeah. So you're in a roof, you're doing your job, you're thinking of it. How long did it take you? How many did you have to make loads of prototypes or was it a simple?
It was quite quick. I made my own prototype and Ralph really laughs at me all the time because it's normally like a bit of metal with a disc cutter and I'm cutting that best you can and all that. Like.
Yeah.
But I made a few prototypes and then my mate's got a fishing company and I was telling him about it and he went, go and see the paintment man. And I thought, if I'm going to paint on it, I need it a little bit better. So then it come on a bit more with all the degrees on it and just moved to the next step. So I went to see the painter man and got a paint on it. And that was actually quite easy. It was about like less than 500 quid, I think, for the patent.
So for anyone watching this that's got an idea, because a lot of tradesmen do have ideas
and
they never do anything with it. you make your own prototype.
I made prototypes. So
and then you go and show it to people, or do you have to keep it a secret? Or?
What I done, I made a prototype.
Yeah,
it's out of MDF, and it was quite amusing when you actually look at it. I wish I kept it. It's one of the things I never kept. Mm. So it's a sort of a that size model.
Yeah,
I showed it to my painter man to show him what was going on because he had to know exactly how it works. So I spoke earlier because he wants that, so no one can. If you do something similar, he would have fought it.
Yeah,
and in a patent, got it all down. The minute you apply for a patent pending, I can then show the weld, as he said. Then my original plan was go to companies like Stanley, they make it, and then send me money.
Yeah.
But basically.
Yeah.
But how it panned out, we got some prototypes made. We got a guy, he charges 500 quid, a few different, because we had virtually what we wanted. He said, I'll do a couple of adjustments. So then we got that, come up with that. And then it's funny, back to my fishing mate, he said, go and see a bloke near us who's got a CNC machine. I see him, he didn't want it, but he recommended someone else. And Gary, my man's been making them for 5 years now.
Do you reckon now that you're doing that with it's Ralph, isn't it?
This is Ralph, this is purely me.
Do you reckon he'll help you to, because one of these in that red.
Well, he could anodise it.
Would look super smart.
And he keeps saying,
really smart.
Ralph said, can I have one? He wants one with no numbers on it, like more blank, anodise it and etch it. But then Gary's got to stop his program, and once he starts making that, so we've not done it yet. But Ralphie's quite desperate.
These would look phenomenal in like that.
Again, when I started, I wanted to keep the costs down because I could have spoke to six people, and then I'd been, I would have.
Well, they'd all want different colours as well. No, that's the problem.
I was going to say, you're giving them choice, aren't you? And as soon as you give them choice, you've got.
No, but one thing, when I started it, I could have spoke to six people and I could have been ordering thousands of them and I could have spoke to another six people, never made none. It depends on the idea. So I wanted to keep the costs as cheap as possible. Will it sell? How good? You know, because I didn't know nothing about the tool market.
Yeah.
What's the value? What's not? It started off £70 or £75 and I'm thinking, will I sell any at £70? It's now £110 because of the metal's gone up. Yeah. We're VAT registered. Your bills go up. So the anodizing at the time, I think it would have been an extra like £7.
Yeah, you worry whether or not you're going to sell.
And I'm thinking, do I anodize and colour it? Let's just sell some. And now I quite like it. Ralph don't, but I like it like that.
I like it like that.
It's just a natural.
Do you know what? I think if you made a red one, you would get people going, oh, I like the classic.
One thing I did want to ask you, because obviously you design your own stuff, don't you? So you do the tool bags.
Yeah.
Like, how in your mind are you thinking, because I know, obviously, you teamed up with Velocity. When you're doing your stuff, you're not really teaming up with anybody. You're taking a punt in the dark. Obviously, you're working with a brand that's already established, but you're both designing stuff that you want to do. Like, as a tradesperson, because for me, I'm making something that I think you would like to use. Like, what's it like on the other side when you're sitting there thinking, well, you know, I don't do the business side, and is this going to sell? What's that like for you guys?
Oh, yeah, a lot of the ideas that I've got, they've just developed on those tools already out there, just making them better now. So that side of it, I don't know.
Because you might think that it works, but then obviously, like, do you ever sit there and think, well, actually, I've got this. Is anybody else going to use it?
Oh, no. I've got some vacuum socks made up, and I thought, I'm going to sell these like hotcakes, and they just couldn't sell.
Yeah.
And that was a mad one where I would have thought that would sold more than these.
The
amount of people with vacuums, power tools, sanders.
Yeah.
There's a few out there, but mine was much smaller, lighter, and I thought I'd sell loads and loads of them.
Yeah.
And nothing.
It's a funny strange one. Game, yeah.
Yeah, some of the things that you think are not as good.
What about you when you're making your bags?
I mean, for me, the bag thing was I'd used every bag, pretty much every bag on the market, and was never happy, and I would always modify them.
That's similar, is obviously when you're saying that vacuum sock, I thought it would have sold loads. Yeah. Like, did you ever sit there and think when you're making, you're designing these bags, I'd use it?
I basically designed a bag for me, and I think that's why it was successful. I was more like, oh, this is amazing, I'm designing my own tool bag. I was never really thinking, how many am I going to sell? It was just the opportunity, and the fact that we sold so many and I then got to design four more bags was, I just think, because I was making bags for myself, because I knew what I liked, what I wanted, what I thought other plumbers would like. It was the last bag, which is the boiler, basically a boiler servicing bag, so you got your flue gas analyzer and all that in one side and then your tools in the other. That's the first bag I designed for other people in mind.
So anyway, I was going to quickly go back to, take us back to how you got into the trade.
So, yeah, at a very young age, almost like really young, going to work with my dad at weekends when he was working. And then as it went on, I'd done my school experience. You know, you go to work from school. So again, went with my dad.
I wish they'd have pushed me to do trade. Yeah, I did work experience.
Work experience, a company
called Bayer.
Chemical.
Aspirin. Oh, blimey, yeah.
Making aspirin. Have you got any?
I wish I did. Need some. But I ended up there for hours.
So, done school experience, went to work again with my dad. And it's probably a bit of a cop out on both departments because we were working for Ryden's and they had like a dedicated officer. So I said, I want to be an apprentice. So he found an apprentice straight away. He worked one day a week, so I done my apprenticeship with him. Then I was on site with my dad until he retired, but we was with Ryden, and I think I said last time, Roger, like 20 years. It felt like 20, but it was probably a little bit less than that. They had an internal buyout. The company changed, and it was time to move on. So they moved on to a few different companies.
So how did you two come to meet? What's the story behind that?
Well, I advertised the square early days.
And you took pity on him.
we advertised in a magazine that Roger was writing for.
Yeah. Professional Builder magazine.
Yeah. And then, as you know, like me in front of the cameras are not very good, but then speaking to Roger one day, just said, if you've got a roof to film it. And I'm like, I've got to do it. And it's really good. The guys bought the square in COVID. Mm. And going back, I dropped it off. All my customers used to drop it off if it's local, because I just like to meet them, have a chat, see how it is.
Yeah.
Got work out of it as well. Gary bought the square. He was going to pitch his own roof. And a bit down the line, I said to him, have you pitched that roof? And he went, no, not yet. And I went, I'll come and do it. But he asked me first, and I went, no, I'm too busy.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, Roger's like, film it. So it's a single-story building. So yeah, Roger come and filmed it. Really nervous. And but yeah, that was about it, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, I would say that when I first came across the square, okay, so I worked for the magazine, and the idea was with the magazine that if you buy some advertising, we'd give you a review, and they always try to make it a nice review, but I resisted that. I thought, no, just make it a horrible review. So... So I actually reviewed your products very early days, yeah, yeah. So anyway, so
he Dan, probably thought the same as you, Pete. Shit.
So Dan sent down his colleague to show me the square, and I kind of got it, but I didn't get it. And then I thought we really need to show this out on site, being used, so that people fully understand what it does, because showing it on a bench, people are going to go, okay. Mm. But when you see it in use, and then you think, that's how it works. That's how it works really quickly and easily. So getting that relationship with Daniel, make the video, it's good content for us, good for Daniel, and he's subsequently worked on quite a number of projects which we've videoed, which haven't always had anything to do with his products. It's just the kind of flow of benefit, if you like. He helps the channel. Mm. I would just say there's one thing, that if you are going to use his square and you want to calculate the lengths of your rafters, he also has an app which he built for nothing, and he puts on there, so there's no money involved in that. It's just out there for anybody who wants to use. You don't have to buy a square. You can go onto a Central Carpenter Tools, you can download the app, and it doesn't matter what you're doing, whether you're in America or whatever, the same thing applies. It works for all those things. So I think that kind of thing, doing that for just the good of the community, you know, it costs you a bit of money to get that app developed and so on and get it out there, but I think doing that kind of thing is fantastic.
He's your best salesman you've ever had.
but it is, because it's that bit of, you know, a lot of people say, oh, we've got to make money out of every single thing. If you just give something away to people, and it's just like, you feel good, don't you?
Yeah,
you
yeah,
just feel,
yeah.
And then they say, oh, I like that company. Mm. You know, they've given me something, and it works, you know. So you don't need to worry about all the ready reckoners like we used to do, or knowing, what is that thing you've got on there? Trigonometry, then.
So, plans for the future?
I've got a few more ideas. I'm glad this one's out though. This done me head in for far too long.
The hinge jig, yeah.
And like, you know, the just as Ralph's making the blocks, where there's a little issue. So it's not majorly stressful, but he made the load.
I mean, it was majorly stressful at the time, because he made loads and they were wrong.
Yeah, basically.
And it was like in the scrap bin.
I mean, just for people listening or watching, how long is that process from initial sort of concept and then talking with Ralph to actually getting it?
This was about a year. About a year.
Because people don't realise. That's why when somebody goes, that's a load of shit, and I'm thinking, I've spent 18 months on it.
Mm. And a lot of money.
Yeah. That was a lot of time. I was going to see Ralph, and so I'd be down there for like an 8-hour day.
Yeah.
And a few times it was 8 hours of me just talking about that. He's making time, you're changing bits. So yeah, it's about a year.
Are you wasting time? I think that some of you probably are, and I have a solution for you. Nobody wants to do any type of admin. Now, I have a solution for you, and it is called Tradeify. It's a fully automated job scheduling, invoicing, and quoting all in one place. Now, that software is going to save you 12 hours a week, and all by using a simple software solution. Now, you can try it for 2 weeks absolutely free, no cards needed, and you'll even get support in person from Tradeify themselves. Now, when you're done, you can always come back to me and thank me, but just enjoy the extra 12 hours that you're going to gain from just using the software.
We like to end on a positive note. So if you've got a word of wisdom or something that's helped you through life that you want to share with people, maybe something to inspire people, now's your chance. Or you can just plug your product or plug your channel.
Or even something where somebody might not think to do it. in terms of like the job or like getting into the trades or anything
like that. What I found since selling the square, and it's a different method than what we spoke about earlier, where you got some guy doing it, not just in the roofing square, lots of things in life, but perhaps instead of being so negative and give us bad comments, just have a little look outside the box. And there's sometimes different ways of doing stuff, everything in life.
Yeah.
And that's what I found doing the square, it's and talking to people, and that's helped people. Just, you know, there's different ways of doing stuff.
Yep.
And buy the square.
Where can you buy the square from?
My website, yeah. Essential Carpenter Tools.
And Roger?
Laugh. Laugh as often as you can, because it's good for your face muscles as well. But yeah. No, but I just think if you don't laugh, I worked in an office for 2 years, you know, along the way, took a job as an editor of a magazine, and I was sitting in the office thinking, it's Friday and I haven't had a laugh this week. You know, it's just like head down computers. Everyone's working, looking at the computer screens. There's no banter, and I love the banter on the building.
That's
site.
The number one thing I miss about working on my own, because when I worked with Kev, even just driving to the next job, you'd just be something you'd be laughing about. Mm. And when you're working, if you're high spirited, you know, having a joke, the day goes faster.
Yeah, absolutely. There are so many funny things to laugh about every day. And you know, quite honestly, if I go into builders merchants and I don't come out laughing, there's something wrong. You know, somewhere down the line, I've met somebody and they talked to the guy behind the till or whatever it is, but you have a laugh, honestly.
I did a video in My City Plumbing and we pretended Wes who'd picked the boiler. It was a Worcester Bosch and everyone says you cut your fingers on a Worcester. He come out and he pulled his sleeve over his hand, so he looked like he's I was crying. I couldn't breathe. I was crying. It was such a good time.
Tomato sauce on it as well, was it?
Oh, so funny, so funny. And when you said Ray Traders earlier, you probably don't know this, but Matt Allwright.
I know Matt. Yeah,
he chased you down.
Came to Quorn, where I live, and he was doing for the one show Villages That Begin With a Letter Q.
Yeah.
Now I drove by and I thought, that's that guy off BBC. I couldn't remember his name, so I drove in, went into the shop, and I googled him, and then I came out and he's still there. I thought, great. So I just went up to him. It's when I first started out, I think it was on Twitter.
Can you chase me down the street?
I was like, Matt, this is going to sound really weird, but I've got a small social media page about plumbing, and it would be really good if we could just do a funny video where you pretend to chase me down the street. And he was like, yeah, of course.
All right.
So he got his old camera crew involved, and we filmed it, and him chasing me as a rogue trader. It was one of the best things. I mean, he didn't have to say yes.
Pete wondered for 3 weeks why the phone never rang.
It was really good for me. It was really popular on my page, and the Daily Mail did a little article about it because a couple of the in the village, a couple of people saw it that I worked for and thought it was real. So that was a little, but it was good. Yeah. Thank you very much. Enjoyed that. I thoroughly enjoyed that one.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thanks. Thanks for your time.
So when did we start recording?
Hopefully we have recorded that other one.